Welcome to the Digital Story Show, new tools for the creative mind. The Digital Story Show takes you inside with tips for the creative pursuit of photography, music, video, hardware, software, techniques, and hacks. You'll soon find yourself thinking less about buttons and menus and more about expressing the artist inside us all. Now the Digital Story Show with Derek Story.
November 8, 2005. The Digital Story Show with Derek Story. What digital camera should I buy? Well, you know, this week I thought we'd get away from some of the technical raw stuff we've been discussing the last couple weeks and really get down to basics. In part, that's because we're coming into the holidays and people start thinking about buying cameras for themselves to take pictures of loved ones, opening gifts and doing festive things, but also for other people. And one of the questions that I'm asked all the time is, Derek, what digital camera should I buy? Well, of course, answering that question is a lot like answering the question, Derek, what car should I buy? Well, that depends on what you need to do and how much you have to spend. It's really that big of a question. And actually, if you're listening to the show, it's probably a question that you're asked often too, because I'm sure in your circles, you're viewed as the photography expert or the person who knows about cameras. So even though I can't tell you right here the specific models of cameras you should buy and so forth, I can talk about some of the features in cameras that we should be looking for to help ourselves or to help other people make good buying decisions. So like a car, they end up with a tool that best fits what they need to do. And that's what I'm going to talk about today. And this actually is a lot of fun. I love talking about this stuff. And this will be a topic that we'll be covering off and on, for months to come, because cameras change, photography changes, and as photographers, we change too. So let's take a look at digital cameras. And today I'm going to focus mainly on compact cameras because I think they're sort of the basic camera in digital photography. And what I mean by compact cameras, there's actually three categories of cameras as I break them down. There's the compact camera, which we typically call the point-and-shoot model. And that's the one that fits in your pocket, fits in your purse, fits in your backpack easily. It's a small camera. It usually has a limited zoom lens. Megapixels now used to be limited, but now you can get 3, 4, 5, even 7 megapixel cameras in compact size. So that's not really an issue, although there are factors around that we'll talk about. But it's usually a small camera with somewhat limited functionality, only compared to the bigger cameras. On their own, they really do quite a bit. The second class of camera, which I'll be talking about more in the future, the advanced amateur camera or the prosumer camera. And those are usually borrow a lot of features from digital SLRs in terms of shooting modes and metering patterns. They usually have bigger zoom lenses and more professional type features. And they also cost more and they're usually bigger. Even though they're usually an all-in-one kind of camera, which means basically that the lens is attached and you can't change lenses on it. But nonetheless, they're pretty sophisticated creatures. And then the third category, the digital SLR, and that's the 35 millimeter camera that we're all very familiar with. Removable lenses, very true through the lens of viewing. And they're a lot bigger, but they also have a lot more features and usually have a much bigger image sensor than the other two types of cameras. And they all have their role in photography, but today I want to talk about the compact camera, mainly because regardless of the other cameras that you have, I think you should have a compact camera. I think everyone should have a point-and-shoot compact camera. And the reason for this is that the best camera in the world is the one that you have with you when you need to take a picture. And so often when people limit themselves to the bigger cameras, those cameras get left at home more often. Well, you know, we're just going out to dinner tonight and, you know, I don't really want to bring the digital SLR and, you know, I might get steak sauce on it and, you know, you have all these reasons for not bringing it. So therefore, you have no camera with you other than maybe a cheesy camera phone on your, you know, in your pocket that doesn't take very good pictures. And then something very interesting happens. There's a great moment in the restaurant or while you're walking to the restaurant, you see something very interesting. You know, picture opportunities, they come out of nowhere and often unexpectedly. And you don't have anything to capture it. So that's what I mean by I think everyone should have a compact camera too, because as photographers, we're more likely to have a camera with us most of the time if we have a small one that's easily totable in our pocket or purse or backpack or whatever we use. Also, I think when most people ask us for camera advice, they're usually thinking compact camera. You know, you're not going to get someone who's about ready to spend $5,000 on a digital SLR asking, hey, what kind of camera should I get? I got $5,000. What should I do? You know, that's not going to happen. It's usually people that are looking to spend $200, $300, maybe $400. So what are some of the things that you should, you know, mention to them when they're thinking about buying a camera? Well, I think the first thing is, regardless of where you end up making the final purchase, you need to actually hold the camera. I think this is very important, actually. Yes, you can buy cameras through mail order or online and all those different things, but I wouldn't recommend buying a camera unless you actually hold it and use it a little bit. And I think, generally speaking, you know, either someone else's, a friend that you have, you know, that maybe has a camera that you think is really cool, or going to the store and seeing what they have, going to camera shows, you know, wherever you can actually get your hands on them. But I think it's important to do that. And pay attention to how it feels in your hand. You know, how does your index finger naturally fall to where the shutter button is? How easy is it to zoom? You know, is the zoom button in a natural place or is it kind of awkwardly located? How does it fit into what you're going to be carrying it around in? For instance, if you're a woman and you carry a purse a lot, do you have room in your purse for a camera? And if you do, how much room do you have? Do you have a special pocket for it? You know, so it really helps to be able to physically feel the camera, see how big it is, see if it will work, you know, within, you know, the stuff that you're going to be carrying it around it. Also, while you're holding the camera in your hands, turn it on, right? Because the next thing to look at is what I call the user interface, the UI. That we borrow this from, you know, the computer world, but then again, aren't digital cameras really computers with lenses on them? You know, they're you know, they're capture devices. And I tell you, the menu system and the placement of buttons and dials varies wildly from camera to camera. Canon UIs are much different than Sony's, much different, worlds apart. As are Nikon, Olympus, Minolta. They all have their own approach to how they organize the menu system. How do you get to the basic functions? And some of the things to look out for while you're testing the different models is, are the things that you use most often easily accessible? What are some of those things? Well, for me, one of the first things I look for is, where is the flash mode button? Because that's one thing that I'm always changing. I'm always going from making the flash go on, fill flash, as I talked about in podcast number one, or turning it off, or having it in auto mode. I'm switching it around all the time. And if I have to go deep into the menuing system to change the flash settings, it's going to drive me crazy. So what I want, one of the things I look for, is I want that flash mode button somewhere on the outside of the body where I can change it easily. Another button that I look for is the ISO button, where you change the sensitivity of the image sensor. I'm constantly going from 100 to 400 and back to 100. And if I have to dig around in the menu system, it's going to drive me nuts. Macro mode or close-up mode, that should be easily accessible also. The metering pattern, if it has multiple metering patterns. Evaluative is sort of the default standard. And then also, a lot of cameras give you the option of partial or spot metering. And again, you're more likely to use them if you can find them quickly. So these are some of the things that I look for when I'm testing the camera's user interface. Then I actually open the menu and start nosing around in there to see if the darn thing makes sense to me. I tell you, you fire some of these things up and you're lost. And, I make my living writing about photography and selling books and all that kind of stuff. So in part, I depend on camera manufacturers not doing a very good job of explaining where all the functions are. On the other hand, when I pick up a camera myself, I feel like I should be able to figure out most of the basic functions without ever opening the owner's manual. And if I pick it up and I am totally lost and I can't find anything, then chances are I'm never really going to resonate with this thing. So I like to navigate the menus and see, how natural they feel and how comfortable I can get. And then I save the owner's manual for really, learning the details and the nuances of this tool. After I do that, I do like to take a couple pictures. And mainly what I'm looking for at this point is, how responsive is the shutter? Does the camera take a long time to focus? Is there a really long lag from the time I push the shutter down halfway till it's ready to take a picture? What is the resistance of the shutter button? Does it feel good, or is it, you just barely touch it and the thing goes off? A lot of these things over the long haul are features that will either drive you crazy or that you will love about the camera. So I think actually holding it and testing it is a big deal. Now, to be fair to retailers, if you go to a store to do this and you take up their time at the counter, my personal opinion is then you should seriously consider buying the camera there. Not always, but I think they should be in the running. And, these days, I think retailers, what we call the brick and mortars, work very hard to be competitive with online. Now, I buy online too. I do both. But a lot of times when I buy online, I already know what I want and I just place the order. I don't need to waste anyone's time. So to be fair, if you do go to stores to do this, also consider them, serious contenders for making the sale. Okay, so now let's talk about some of the other features. And the next one that's really important to me is the LCD monitor. And all digital cameras have one. And I think that the monitor is a really important part of the camera because it's where you're viewing most of the time the picture when you take it. You can use the optical viewfinder on a compact camera, but if it even has one, a lot of them don't these days. But a lot of times those are kind of cheesy. They're not They're not very good. They're not a very satisfying experience. And actually looking at the LCD monitor is more pleasing and easier to compose the picture. And monitors have really changed in the last year and a half. I look back at some of my old digital cameras and they have these little 1.5-inch LCD monitors that were, you know, kind of like two postage stamps side by side. And, you know, so when you're lining up the world on it, you're kind of squinting your eyes and trying to you know, see things. And then when you want to review the picture afterwards, too, you have the same situation. And a lot of times you really couldn't tell how good of a shot you had until you got home and loaded it on the computer. But boy, recently, and especially in 2005, these LCD monitors have gotten a lot better. I have, even on my current digital SLR now, I have a 2.5-inch LCD monitor on the back. And all of my working cameras have at least a 2-inch monitor on the back. They're always listed in the specs very clearly, even on the box most of the time. And when you're shopping, you just get to know them. Of course, 2 inches, they're measured just like television screens, right? Diagonally measured 2 inches, 2.5. And I really think that these days, I would be hesitant to buy a camera that had less than a smaller than a 2-inch monitor. And I really like the 2.5-inch monitors. And on some of them, you even have 3-inch LCDs these days, and they're just phenomenal. They're just like, feel like you're looking at a little TV set. They're really terrific. But the world looks a lot better through these larger monitors. And then it's not only the size, but it's also the quality of the image. And these do vary a lot. And, you know, really it comes down to how many pixels does each monitor display? How good is the color? And then when you're taking pictures with the camera and you're using it as a viewfinder and you're moving it around, how well, you know, does it track in real time? Do you get a nice clean picture as you're moving the camera, or do you get some motion blur and things like that? So really give the monitor a good look over and try to get the biggest, brightest, most colorful monitor that you can get. I would rate this pretty high. Another feature that I like with LCD monitors, and I'm really hooked on these, are the ones that sometimes pull out and swivel. A lot of times, those are only available on the advanced amateur camera models, but recently I've started to see them more and more on compact cameras too. I have a little Casio digital camera that's, even though it has a nose, it's the P505, the EX P505. And it's definitely a compact camera. It's not a top shirt pocket camera, but it definitely fits in your back pocket or front pocket on your pants. And it has that monitor that swings all the way out, and you can angle it up or down, and you can even turn it all the way over so that you can set the camera on a tripod or table or something and have the screen pointing back at you, so that when you're doing group shots or self-portraits or something, you can actually line up the shot and make sure that it looks good. I really like the swiveling LCDs for when I'm taking shots in crowds, because you can raise the camera up over your head and angle it down to whatever you're trying to photograph and adjust the monitor so you can actually compose the picture while the camera's way up over your head. And it's also great for when you're shooting real low to the ground. You can turn the monitor upwards so you don't have to lie on your belly to do one of those ground shots. You can just kind of bend down and look at it. They're really, really handy. And if you do photography in groups and crowds and stuff a lot, or you do a lot of close-up photography, it's something to really consider, the swiveling monitor. Also, if you use your camera for movie mode, which I'm going to talk about here in a second. So, obviously, spend a lot of time considering what kind of monitor it is and how well, you know, it fits your style of shooting. Now, you'll still see an optical monitor on a lot of digital cameras, and they're handy in a couple situations. One, when it's real bright outside, sometimes it's hard to see the image on an LCD monitor, and it's nice to be able to use the optical monitor, optical lens. They also help when you want a real when you want to save battery power, and because you know obviously the LCD is gobbling up juice, whereas the optical viewfinder doesn't. So there are some advantages to them. The problem with them for me a lot of times on compact cameras is that you look and you compose a shot one way with the optical viewfinder, and then you look at it later and it's like, you know, not exactly what you thought you did. And so that's very frustrating. And for that reason, I don't use the optical viewfinders on compact cameras unless I have the need to. But nonetheless, if you do like shooting, looking through an optical viewfinder, then that's something to take into consideration when you're shopping for the camera. The other thing, while we're just talking about the physical aspects of the camera, is of course the shooting lens. And generally speaking, you get a 3x zoom lens on a compact camera that goes from a mild wide angle to a mild telephoto, sort of the equivalent of a 35 to 105 millimeter lens on a 35 millimeter camera. And there's really not a lot to say about that other than, you know, I like to see a name brand that I recognize on the lens. For instance, Sony, they often use Carl Zeiss glass for their cameras, and Carl Zeiss lenses are very good. Canon optics are very good. Nikon optics are very good, as are Olympus. Sometimes on some of the camera brands, such as Casio and so forth, you may or may not see a lens branded by someone known for making good glass. I know that some Casios put Canon lenses on their cameras, and quite honestly, I always feel a little bit better when I see that. But sometimes a Casio or some other branded camera will have a, you know, they won't say. They'll say, you know, just give the specs for the lens. And quite honestly, I'm usually a little bit dubious of that. I really do prefer to have a lens on there that I recognize. And quite honestly, a lot of times, you know, I can tell a difference. So if it isn't listed on the lens barrel or something, maybe do a little research and find out, you know, if it's a branded lens and they're just not listing it. But do pay attention to the glass and make sure that, you know, you're getting a good picture-taking lens on your camera. Let's talk a little bit now about shooting modes and some of the functions of the camera. You know, I mentioned earlier that flash modes are really important and should be easy to get to. But the actual picture-taking modes, I think, are pretty important also, and they should be easy to set. Now, generally speaking, most of the time, we take pictures in what we call program mode. And program mode is great. You know, the camera evaluates the lighting, and it sets both the aperture and the shutter speed for you. And a lot of times, it does a terrific job of that. But you get into special situations, like when you want to take a portrait or a close-up or a shot at night with a flash. And it's actually very helpful, especially on a compact camera where you don't get to fiddle with the controls, to have shooting modes for these situations. So I like to have a camera that has a good shooting mode for close-up, often represented by a flower. For portrait, for action, for nighttime fill flash, and I think those are the ones that I use most often and like to have. And that way, you know, at least then you have some way to, adjust the settings to fit the situation, since you can't go into aperture priority mode where you get to actually set the f-stop of the lens, or shutter priority where you get to physically set the shutter speed. Every now and then you will run into a compact camera that has those, but it's rare, and most of the time, you know, you're stuck with these scene modes. And knowing that, make sure that you look at a camera that has the scene modes that you need. Now, just a short digression about scene modes. The action mode, or the sports mode, on a compact camera is sort of like putting a spoiler on a minivan. It's not really that useful. Compact cameras are not good cameras for sports photography and things like that. The shutter lag is usually too long. The zoom lens is usually not long enough. And just in general, they're not very well equipped for that kind of photography. If that's the kind of shooting you do a lot, then I think you really need to consider also an advanced amateur or prosumer model that has good responsiveness and also a longer lens, or even a digital SLR. And this is really where you get into the territory where I think certain types of photographers need to have two cameras. One camera isn't going to do it all for them. The compact camera is a great camera to have for your candids and street shooting and on the go and vacations and all that kind of stuff. But if you really do want to get good shots out on the soccer field or something like that, then you need to have a camera that's able to do that for you. And that's usually a second camera. So I guess we wouldn't put the sports mode that high of a priority on the compact camera, because it's not going to do a lot for you anyway. Portrait and close-up and night portrait, though, are very important. Now, one of the things that compact cameras just do a great job of that digital SLRs don't, at least right now, is they shoot movies. And in podcast number 2, I believe, I talked about making movies with a digital camera. And I think that this is something really worth taking a look at while you're shopping for a camera. How good is the movie mode? You know, how long can you shoot a clip without stopping the camera? It used to be just like, you know, a minute and a half, and then the camera's memory would fill up and you'd have to stop, let it kind of write to the memory card, and then let you shoot again. But now, I tell you, the electronics have really improved, as have the codecs, which are the compressor-decompressor, which is part of the magic that allows you to record video onto a memory card. And now I think it's more the standard to see compact cameras that basically can shoot movies until the memory card fills up. And I think this is really cool. But there still are some differences in the movie modes. And one of the things that, if you like shooting these movies, try to find a camera that can shoot full resolution, which would be 640 by 480 pixels, at full frame rate, which is 30 frames per second. A camera that can do that then essentially can shoot at the same specifications as a digital camcorder. Not necessarily the same quality, although I tell you, some of them come awfully close, but certainly the same specifications, so that your footage can be shown on a television or burned to a DVD and played on any number of output devices later, and actually look pretty darn good with nice smooth motion. So if you like shooting these movies, I really look for something that can do 640 by 480 at 30 frames per second. And then look at the menu and see, you know, what kind of options do you have in movie mode? You know, and do you have some flexibility? I think an important aspect of movie making on a compact camera for me is also the placement of the microphone and how good of audio does it record. Now, you're not going to get great audio with a compact camera simply because the microphone is on the camera. And so, you know, there's always going, you know, if you're recording someone who's standing 4 feet away, 4 feet away is really too far away to have a microphone from the source. But, you know, you live with what you can. But some of the microphones are definitely better than others. And also, how much noise from the camera does the microphone pick up also? If you have a chance to test this, I think it's really worthwhile because audio is such an important part of any video production. Even, you know, home movies on the, you know, personal movies that you make while on vacation. I actually have one camera, again, this Casio that I mentioned earlier, this P505, that has stereo microphones and records in stereo, and it's actually very cool and sounds quite good most of the time. So the placement of the microphones, how many are there, and how well they record is something else that you want to look at if movie making is important to you or the person that you're consulting with. And that's why, you know, I use the analogy that recommending a camera is like recommending a car because or a motor vehicle, as a peace officer would say, because if you have to, you know, haul around a bunch of hay, then you're not going to get a Volvo, right? You're going to get a pickup truck. And if you're not going to take movies or the person's not interested in movies at all, then they don't have to spend the extra money for a hybrid compact camera that really, you know, does a good job of capturing video footage and just, you know, get a camera that, you know, is more designed specifically for still pictures. Again, though, I tell you, having a camera that you can carry in your pocket that takes good still pictures and can capture movies really gives you a lot of options when you're out and about. I suppose we should talk about megapixels for a second. I mean, that's for a while there, that's the only thing everyone wanted to talk about. Now, you know, that's not as an important issue as it was, mainly because almost all cameras have enough megapixels. But how much is enough? And these days, I really think that you need at least 4 megapixels for, you know, any type of serious photography. And, you know, compact cameras are very, you know, worthy of serious photography. And if you have 4 megapixels, then that means you can make very nice looking 5x7s and even, you know, push it up to 8x10 if you need. 5 megapixels, very nice. 6, depending on, you know, the price, if you're still staying within the price range that you want. You know, so if you can get a little bit more within your budget, I think that's great. But I would set 4 megapixels as the baseline. And while we're talking about megapixels and talking about, you know, how much you can afford, remember the true price of a digital camera is the price of the camera itself, plus sales tax, right? Plus an extra memory card. And a lot of times cameras don't even come with memory cards anymore. But you need an extra memory card regardless because the one that they give you is always, you know, something crazy like 32 megabytes, which will last you about 15 minutes. And an extra battery. So the true price of a digital camera is a camera plus the tax plus an additional memory card plus an additional battery. And then that, you know, is what should fit within your budget. And in terms of size of memory card, if you're getting a 4-megapixel camera, I really recommend that you get a 512-megabyte memory card. That's gonna give you a lot of storage and, you know, should get you through, you know, a short trip, you know, or, you know, a week's worth of shooting unless you're on vacation or doing something and taking a lot of shots. And pretty much going to guarantee that you're not going to run out of memory. And as far as the extra battery goes, you know, the way that works is that, you know, you always want to have an extra charged battery with you so that when the battery that's in your camera unexpectedly goes out on you, you have a battery to change to so you can keep shooting. And then when you get back to the room, charge them both. So figure all that in to the price of the camera. Now, are there anything, any other features that you need to look at? Well, cameras often don't come with cases anymore. So what are you going to do for a case? I mean, you're not going to spend $300 on a digital camera and then, you know, drop it in your purse with the keys and the sunglasses and everything else. So you want to have some type of protection for it. And depending on how you're going to carry the camera around, and something that you may or may not want to attach to your belt, or something that, you know, does maybe have room for an extra memory card or an extra battery. You know, these are things to look at and really something to consider along with the camera itself. Because chances are, a lot of times you're not going to get a case with the camera. You got to check that out because you don't want to carry these things around without a case. And same thing goes for once you get it. First thing you're going to do is put that strap on, right? Put that wrist strap on or that neck strap on and use it. Don't use a digital camera without using the strap because you're just asking for trouble. Things happen. And when they happen, you don't want your camera to be landing on concrete or a tile floor. Ugh. Just the thought of that, you know, gives me the willies. The last thing that I want to mention in terms of, you know, what I consider the really important things for your digital camera is, does it play nicely with the computer system that you have? And is there any bundled software with it? So, for instance, you know, if you're on a Windows machine and you already have software that you're using, see if your camera works with it. And, you know, look it up, look up the specs on the website and see if you're compatible. If you're on a Mac, same thing. If you're using iPhoto, will iPhoto recognize your camera? And then one thing that I like these days and I've seen more and more of is USB 2 connectivity on the cameras instead of the older 1.1. And this is a pretty big deal when you're uploading your pictures, that the speed, the transfer speed, is much faster with USB 2. Now, there's camera manufacturers actually play a little game with you with USB 2. There's USB 2 connectivity, and then there's high-speed USB 2. And really, the high-speed one is the one that's different from USB 1.1. So, you have to kind of really, you know, look at the owner's manual or the website on this, but you do want a USB 2.0 and the high speed version of that. Another thing that I like on, you know, in this area of cameras is one, cameras that are USB storage devices. Now, what does that mean? Well, what that means is that when you connect the camera to the computer, you actually get an icon on your computer that looks like a hard drive. And essentially that's what the camera becomes. It becomes a mountable drive. This is really a cool functionality because essentially what that means is then that camera will work with any modern computer without software, without specific software. The computer sees it. It sees it as a storage device. It mounts it. And then you can just open up that icon and all your pictures are in there and you can drag them onto the computer or do whatever you want. And you don't need specific software to make the transfer. And believe it or not, some cameras still are not mass storage devices. Most notable are Canon compacts, which I believe still don't have this functionality. I can't believe it because, you know, I'm actually often a big fan of Canon cameras, but this is one area where they just have really fallen down. And so then you need iPhoto or the Microsoft Picture Taker or whatever to actually offload your pictures or use the bundled software. And that's just a real pain because if you go over to your friend's house and they use a different kind of camera, but they have a computer and you want to share pictures with them, you know, you plug in your camera and you know, the computer doesn't see it. That's a real shame. Then you have to go to something else like a card reader or something like that. Which brings me in to the valuable accessories part of this talk. I do think that external card readers are terrific. And basically what this is, it's a pretty affordable device. Usually you can get them for $20 to $30. The really fancy ones can go up to $40 or so. And you plug the card reader into your computer, and then you take the memory card out of your camera and put it into the card reader and upload that way. They're usually a lot faster than what your camera can transfer, but the main thing is they don't use the camera's battery power to make the transfer, and so therefore your batteries last longer, and they're pretty handy. So that's an accessory to look at if you have the camera you want and the extra battery and the memory card and still have a little bit of money left over. You might want to take a look at the card reader. Finally, you know, one accessory that I'll throw in just as a promo is one of the books that I've written called The Digital Photography Pocket Guide, the third edition. Make sure you look at the third edition. And there's always a link to it on the Digital Story website. It's usually at the bottom of the page. You'll see some of the books that I've written, and Pocket Guide is down there. But this is really a handy book. I've been working on it for a long time. It's in the third edition. It's really compact. It's very easy to carry. It fits in your back pocket or in the camera bag. And I've tried to get everything in there that you need to know about all the different types of shooting situations and camera functions and even charts, you know, to help you set the right white balance and all that kind of stuff. And I crammed it into this book that's easy to use. And you can get it on Amazon, I think, for $10.14 or something like that. If you just click on the icon on the site, it'll just take you right to Amazon. You can order it. And I really think it's a valuable accessory to help you, you know, really understand all the different functions in your digital camera and how to use them and how to tackle all these lighting situations and how to make your compact camera take professional shots, which most of them can do. So much for the shameless plug, but I really wouldn't bring it up if I didn't think it was valuable. So that's sort of my overview of things to look at for a compact camera. Now, you notice I haven't really given you any specific models right here. And what I'd like to do is that if you're interested in a particular model or trying to decide between two, just go ahead and send mail at the Digital Story site. And the website is www.thedigitalstory.com, all one word there. And at the top of the page, you'll always see a submissions button. Just click on that. You can write your question or, you know, what you're considering. Send it to me, and I'll actually, answer you. And I've been getting quite a bit of mail recently, and it's really a lot of fun to hear from you all, you know, and what you're thinking. And I think that's the way that I like to tackle the specific models. Now, I might do a show here as we get later into November that really highlights some of my favorite compact cameras. And if that's of interest to you, let me know and say, hey, you know, that would be great. I'd love to hear that. That way I'm doing something that you want to hear. So I think that's it for now. Go to the show notes as always, and I'm going to put some, I'm going to recap a lot of this and especially the specific things to look for. And send me mail if you got any specific questions. And just have fun with this. But really, the first thing that you want to do when people ask your advice for buying a compact camera, really spend a minute asking them, well, you know, how do you want to use it? What type of shots do you want to take? and find out a little bit about them, and then help them through the discussion of the different kinds of functions that the camera can do, help them find a model that works for them. I know I'm going to be probably hanging out in stores with a few friends here over the next few weeks, helping them buy cameras, and I suspect you will too, and I hope this show helps you do that better and more efficiently. Okay, well, until next week, make sure you check out the site, The Digital Story. I'm posting things almost every day. Send me your questions and your comments and let me know what you want to hear about, and we'll take it from there. Thanks for joining me, and I'll see you next week. This is Derek Story for The Digital Story. Bye-bye now.
Your questions and comments, email them to questions@thedigitalstory.com. For show notes, web blogs, and informative articles, visit www.thedigitalstory.com. We'll see you next time on The Digital Story.